Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. Got something a little bit different for you today. One of the members of the A Year of War and Peace Reddit community offered to read a chapter for me, giving me a bit of a break from reading for a day. How nice is that? I thought that was so awesome. So I'm going to hand you over to Reddit user Disgruntled Upvoter, who's going to read you this chapter, Book 5, Chapter 8. And then I'll be back at the end of the chapter to finish up and do the discussion part of the podcast.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Disgruntled Upvoter. I figured I would give Andrew a little bit of a break and take over reading for one day. So we're going to do Volume 2, Book 2, Chapter 8 of the PNV translation versus his mod translation that he's been using. So here we go. The war was heating up, and its theater was approaching the borders of Russia. Everywhere curses were heard on the enemy of the human race, Bonapartius. Militia and recruits were being gathered from villages, and divergent news kept coming from the theater of the war, false as usual, and therefore reinterpreted in various ways. The life of old Prince Bolkonsky, Prince Andrei, and Princess Maria had changed much since 1805. In 1806, the old prince was made one of the 8 commanders-in-chief of the militia, then appointed all over Russia. The old prince, despite the weakness of age, which had become especially noticeable during the time when he had counted on his son as killed, did not believe he had the right to refuse the function assigned to him by the sovereign himself, and this activity newly opened up for him roused and strengthened him. He traveled continually around the 3 provinces entrusted to him. He was thorough to the point of pedantry in his duties, strict to the point of cruelty with his subordinates, and personally entered into the minutest details of things. Princess Maria now stopped taking lessons in mathematics from her father, and merely went to her father's study in the mornings, whenever he was at home, accompanied by the wet nurse and little Prince Nikolai, as his grandfather called him. The nursing Prince Nikolai lived with his wet nurse and the nanny Savishna in the rooms of the late princess, and Princess Maria spent the greater part of the day in the nursery, replacing her little nephew's mother as well as she could. Mademoiselle Bourienne also seemed to love the boy passionately, and Princess Maria, often depriving herself, yielded to her friend the pleasure of dandling the little angel, as she called her nephew, and playing with him. Near the altar of the church at Bald Hills there was a chapel over the grave of the little princess, and in the chapel had been placed a marble memorial, brought from Italy, in the form of an angel with spread wings, ready to soar into the sky. The angel had a slightly raised upper lip, as if he was about to smile, and once, as they were leaving the chapel, Prince Andrei and Princess Maria confessed to each other that the angel's face strangely reminded them of the face of the deceased woman. But stranger still was something that Prince Andrei did not tell his sister, which was that in the expression which the artist had chanced to give the angel's face, Prince Andrei read the same words of meek reproach he had once read on his dead wife's face. "Ah, why have you done this to me?" Soon after Prince Andrei's return, the old prince separated his son's share of the inheritance and gave him Bogucharovo, a large estate 30 miles from Bald Hills. Partly on account of the painful memories connected with Bald Hills, and partly because Prince Andrei did not always feel able to bear calmly with his father's character, and partly because he needed solitude, Prince Andrei took advantage of Bogucharovo, began building, and spent most of his time there. After the Austerlitz campaign, Prince Andrei had firmly decided never to serve in the army again, and when war began and everyone had to serve, he took a post raising militia under his father's leadership in order to get out of active service. It was as if, after the campaign of 1805, the old prince and his son had exchanged roles. The old prince, roused by his activity, expected nothing but good from the present campaign. Prince Andrei, on the contrary, not taking part in the war and regretting it deep in his heart, saw nothing but bad. On the 26th of February, 1807, the old prince left on his rounds. Prince Andrei stayed at Bald Hills, as he did most often during his father's absence. Little Nikolushka had been ill for 3 days now. The coachman who drove the old prince came back from town bringing papers and letters for Prince Andrei. The valet with the letters did not find the young prince in his study and went to Princess Maria's side, but he was not there either. The valet was told that the prince had gone to the nursery. "If you please, Your Excellency, Petrusha has come with papers," said one of the maids who assisted the nanny, addressing Prince Andrei, who was sitting on the child's little chair, frowning, his hands trembling, pouring drops of medicine from a vial into a glass half filled with water. "What's that?" he said crossly, and his hand carelessly twitched, pouring an extra number of drops from the vial into the glass. He dumped the medicine on the floor and asked for more water. The maid gave it to him. In the room stood a baby's crib, two trunks, two armchairs, a table, and a child's table with a little chair on which Prince Andrei was sitting. The curtains were drawn, and a candle burned on the table, screened by a bound music book to shield the bed from the light. "My friend," said Princess Maria, addressing her brother from beside the crib where she was standing, "it is better to wait. Later." "Ah, for pity's sake, you keep saying stupid things and you keep wanting to wait. See, we've waited," said Prince Andrei in a spiteful whisper, clearly with the wish to sting his sister. "My friend, really, it is better not to wake him. He's asleep," the princess said in a pleading voice. Prince Andrei got up and, holding the glass, tiptoed toward the crib. "So you really think we shouldn't wake him?" he said hesitantly. "As you wish, really, I think, but as you wish," said Princess Maria, clearly abashed and ashamed that her opinion had triumphed. She pointed to the maid who was calling to her brother in a whisper. It was the second night of the two of them had not slept, looking after the boy who was burning with fever. For two whole days, not trusting their house doctor and expecting the one that they had sent for from town, they had been trying now one, now another remedy. Worn out by sleeplessness and anxiety, they shifted their grief onto each other, reproached each other, and quarreled. "Petrusha's here with the papers from your father," the girl whispered. Prince Andrei stepped out. "Well, what now?" he said crossly, and having listened to the verbal orders from his father and taking the envelopes from his father's letter, he went back to the nursery. "Well, how is he?" asked Prince Andrei. "Still the same. Just wait, for God's sake. Karl Ivanich always says that sleep is the best of all," Princess Maria whispered with a sigh. Prince Andrei went over to the baby and felt him. He was burning. "Devil take you and your Karl Ivanich." He picked up a glass with the drops of medicine in it and went back again. "Andrei, don't," said Princess Maria, but he glowered at her angrily, and at the same time sufferingly, and bent over the baby with the glass. "But I want it," he said. "Well, give it to him, I beg you." Princess Maria shrugged her shoulders, but took the glass obediently, and, calling to the nanny, began to administer the medicine. The baby cried and wheezed. Prince Andrei, wincing, clutched his head, went out, and sat on a sofa in the next room. He still had the letters in his hand. He opened them mechanically and began to read. On blue paper, in his large, elongated hand, occasionally using abbreviations, the old prince wrote the following. "I have at this moment received most joyful news through a courier. If it is not a lie, Bennigsen is supposed to have won a full victory over Bonapartius at Preussisch-Eylau. According to the footnote, Preussisch-Eylau is a battle that took place on 8 February of 1807. On the Russian side, Bennigsen lost more than a third of his men, but there were also heavy losses on the French side, and both claimed the victory. In Petersburg, there is general rejoicing, and no end of rewards have been sent out to the army. Though he is a German, I congratulate him. The commander in Korchevo, a certain Kondrakov, is doing something I cannot fathom. Up to now, additional men and provisions have not been delivered. Gallop there at once and tell him that his head will roll unless everything is done within a week. I have also received a letter about the Battle of Preussisch-Eylau from Petinka, who took part in it. Everything is true. When those who should not interfere do not interfere, even a German can beat Bonapartius. They say he is fleeing in great disarray. See that you gallop to Korchevo without delay and carry out my orders." Prince Andrei sighed and opened another envelope. This was a two-page, closely written letter from Bilibin. He folded it without reading it and read his father's letter again, ending with the words, "Gallop to Korchevo and carry out my orders." "No, excuse me, I won't go now, not until the baby gets well," he thought, and going to the door, he peeked into the nursery. Princess Maria was still standing by the crib, gently rocking the baby. "Yes? What's that other unpleasantness he writes?" Prince Andrei recalled the contents of his father's letter. "Yes, our side has won a victory over Bonaparte, precisely when I'm not serving. Yes, yes, he keeps making fun of me. Well, he's welcome, too." And he began to read Bilibin's letter, written in French. He read, not understanding half of it, read only so as to stop thinking for at least a minute about what he had been thinking of exclusively and painfully for all too long.
All right, there we have it, another chapter down. Thank you, disgruntled upvoter, for that. Very nicely done. there's been a bit of a shift in attitudes over at the Bolkonskys. Old man Bolkonsky, it seems he's gotten a job again in the military. He's supervising the enrollment for the war effort against Napoleon. And it's really seemed to have given him a sense of purpose again. He's come alive, he's reinvigorated. But on the other hand, his son, Andrei Bolkonsky, has kind of flipped the other way from being someone who only wanted to be out there proving himself in the war effort. Now he just wants to lay low. He's taken a job under his father. Seems to be a bit of a nothing job, just so that he doesn't have to go off to war again. And he's just licking his wounds, so to speak, after the death of his wife. In this chapter, he seems to be freaking out a little bit. He's a bit anxious about, I think, his son's fever. His son's sick and he's not coping too well with the stress of, I suppose, potentially losing his son. The poor guy has a lot to feel bad about in this chapter, doesn't he? The letter that his dad wrote him was it stung him a bit. It seemed like it was a bit of a personal attack on him. His wife is still questioning, what have you done to me, from beyond the grave, through this statue that's been put outside her grave. His son is, sick, which is obviously something to worry about. He's guilty, he's depressed, he's sad. It's not a good time to be Prince Andrei. Sardonicus09 said, "We see quite a difference between the guilt-ridden Andrei in this chapter and the Andrei who dreamed of and then attempted acts of valor on the battlefield. Reading this reminds me that no matter how successful I may be at work, whenever I foolishly neglect or treat my family poorly, the foundation of any happiness I have collapses and I feel terrible." Mellow Yellow said, "Andrei's change of perspective about his wife and family, from impatience and resentment to appreciation and happiness, makes the loss of his wife so much more soul-wrenching and heartbreaking. Andrei's anxiety and fear of losing more is heightened with his son's illness. I'm pulling for Andrei and hope nothing happens to his newborn son." Yeah, I think he just needs a bit of time to grieve, really. That his father gave him that estate of his own, I think that's a really good thing, and that his sister Maya is helping him out, helping him raise his son, another good thing. But the poor guy is going to be in a dark place. There's no denying that. Well, I hope you enjoyed this little bit different episode with a different reader. I'll be back to reading again tomorrow, back to the usual. Thanks very much for listening today, and I'll see you tomorrow.